Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
Season 1, Episode 3, Affairs of State. Kitty and Warren continue to argue but end up in bed. Tommy and Sarah are at odds at Ojai Fruit Company. As Jonathan surprises Kitty in LA. At a Walker pool party, Nora stuns the family and a shocked Holly that she knew about William's affair.
Hey, welcome to episode 3.
Welcome.
It is a little bit messy still, so bear with us. We are figuring things out. This is the first time we've done anything that's like sort of long-term focused project like this. So some of the details of episodes 1 and 2 bled together, and I think a little bit into episode 3 as well, because now that I'm thinking back on episode 2, I think the thing that sends Justin off the deep end is the discovery of his dad's infidelity.
He did discover it before the rest of the family discovers it. Because we see a flashback, I'm pretty sure, where he sees Holly in the office with William.
Yes, correct.
That's right.
And then he goes to the house, I think, and confronts her, and he sort of finds out, or he gets her to admit that that is actually the truth of the situation. I think he confides in one of the siblings, but I think all this is going on in episode 2, which leads to him sort of crashing out and relapsing. Well, maybe not relapsing. He's high like in the first episode. So just
continuing that spiral.
Well, that's why he disappeared, which is why the mom and sister are looking for him in episode 2. So with that in mind, they find him. We had the sort of explosive lecture from mom at the end of the first one. And I think rightfully so, but we hop into episode 3, and at least from what I remember, the beginning of the episode is Nora celebrating her daughter getting embarrassed on national television for being wrong, or at least having the wrong kind of structural argument to bring to the table. And I said, well, it's interesting that the writing in this show is taking a moment to portray a conservative talking head being very confidently incorrect on the air and getting called out for it. And
when fact checking was still allowed.
Well, the mom is like celebrating that her daughter is getting her ass handed to her on TV. And then once they go off the air, you know, it forces Kitty to sort of reflect on like, wow, like I can't believe I sort of did that and embarrassed myself in that way. But the sexual tension between her and what the hell is the dude's name? Is it Jonathan? No,
Warren.
Warren is the co-host. So the sexual tension between them, because they are coming from opposite sides of the political spectrum, it's like they're gonna hate fuck each other at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too, because their chemistry from the first time we see them both on screen is way more powerful than her and her actual boyfriend's chemistry on screen at the time. I don't know if that was just like a casting thing or if that was intentional because of where the storyline goes, but I mean, Josh Hopkins is great in almost everything he does in general, so you know.
Yeah, we saw him pop up in
Shrinking. Right? Yeah, like he's very charismatic. He's very easy to connect with his co-stars, regardless if it's like a sexual tension thing or not. He's just that very likable actor, I think, and he doesn't always play a prick. So I think the chemistry component is just very natural for him. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that was intentional, to be perfectly honest, but it makes you actually root for Kitty and Warren way more and a lot faster than her and her actual partner at the time.
That's fair. And I did get ahead of myself a little bit, but not by that much. It's the end of this episode where they sleep together. So if you've already watched the episode, I'm not really ruining anything. We're just sort of going a little bit out of order there. But We also sort of see the cracks in the foundation of not necessarily the lie, but the maybe like the fantasy of the perfect family, in that as stuff is beginning to get uncovered about what's going on with Dad, it's like you realize the business is in some really leaky financial trouble. They find out through the process of the will, I think, that there is a house that is part of the estate.
In Silver Lake, I think.
Somewhere, yeah. But they didn't know about it, or supposedly didn't know about it. And Nora says, hey, you know, maybe I don't want to sell the house. Maybe we keep it. And she sort of inserts herself into the process to go and investigate where this house is. And she meets the tenant, and her brother Saul is there,
trying to squash this and also make her not want to go see the house, which is even slimier of him to do. Because again, like, how can you really think like she's not on to something, especially when he's pushing so hard against it?
Sally Fields is a really good actress.
I know. I love her. I'm going to say that a lot. Let's just be prepared. Yeah. I love Sally Field.
So in the previous episode, the son had already gone to the home, discovered all of this. He freaked out.
And figured out who she was.
Yeah. So in this episode, mom is beginning to do the detective work, or at least at the time, she's like, I just want to see the house and make a decision, meet the person that lives there, and decide whether or not I want to kick them out in the process of selling the house. So Saul goes with her, knowing full well that the person who lives there is his brother-in-law's mistress. So William's mistress lives at this house. And I think they had a conversation before that as well, where she's like, well, I didn't really expect to be included in the will, but like, I was still a big part of his life. And like,
this is my house.
I don't want to lose my home.
Yeah.
So Sally comes to the house. They meet each other. She hears the sob story of how she's like a down on her luck actress or something. And you know, she's just trying to make it, and she's hanging on to the house or whatever it is. And so Sally, being the generous grieving widow that she is like, hey, we're throwing a pool party. So why don't you come and celebrate with the family? Like, you knew my husband, and, you know, we're all getting together to have not necessarily a celebration of life or a memorial, but just a party to like make everybody like feel some joy again.
Yeah, because Sally Field's character acknowledges earlier on in the episode that no one has used the pool since William died. So she's like, let's throw a pool party to help get everyone back in the pool and back in the backyard. And it's a beautiful weather, a beautiful day. So she's including Holly in this.
She is. And while all that is happening, you have the power struggle at the company between Sarah and what's his face. I'll get the names down sooner or later. It's not just that, it's Tommy. Sarah and Tommy are butting heads because Sarah is not really part of the family business in the same way that he is. He's been there day in, day out. He probably should have been the person to take over logistically, but Dad didn't want it that way. He willed Sarah into that position. So they have a sort of, not a come to Jesus moment, but they meet out in the hallway, and you could tell that he wants the job. And she, I think, at the time is like, look, if you want it, I'll step down right now and you can fucking have it because this shit sucks. And he just says no and moves on. But you could tell that like he's brooding. And I love this moment in that Sarah is trying to investigate what's going on with all the financial matters. And what she says is she finds out about her dad's infidelity. And she wishes, I wish he was alive so that I could kill him, rather than I wish he was alive so I could ask him why he did this. So like, her first thought was like, I'm just so rageful right now that I wish he was still alive so I could murder him. And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting first thought to have in this process. I get it's a drama and you want to like punch it up, and she's probably being at least a little bit cheeky, but she's coming from a very emotional place at that moment, and she's pushing Saul a lot on what the hell is going on with the finances here? Because you're giving me reasons not to trust you. You're not being transparent. you are being very secretive. There's locked files. There's all this stuff that shouldn't be happening. And I need to know why.
Yeah. And I think especially because she was brought in last minute as part of the will, like the will's orders, she's like probably questioning why a lot more now, finding out about that too. Like what other, you know, secrets are being hidden under all of this. And I don't know if we mentioned, I know we've mentioned the company's name, but it is a produce company.
It's like Ojai Food or Ojai Fruit.
Ojai Fruit, I think. So it's like, what else is this covering up? Or is there a cover for something else when we're talking about a produce company?
Definitely seems like a front.
Yeah. And why is Saul being so shady and dodgy about questions? And again, like I still question, what was the point of bringing her in now with him passing versus having her part of the family business before he passed? It's just very shady and suspicious. So I don't blame her for having those questions. And the fact that they're not being direct with her and Tommy's, you know, being emotional and taking things personally, you can't help but question what else could be hidden under all of these layers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're starting to get the understanding at this point that there was some kind of embezzlement going on, or maybe like a restructuring of shares or reallocation of wealth that was being used in a maybe nefarious manner. I don't know how nefarious at this point. But it seemed like they were in deep financial shit and just hiding it for as long as they could. And of course, they didn't want anybody to know. But the stress is probably what killed Dad and why he
with
had
a heart attack. Yep. Yeah. Guess what, guys? Stress is a silent and very loud killer.
Yeah. Hypertension is one of the leading killers in the United States. So just make sure you check your stress levels. If you're feeling burnt out, pay attention to it.
PSA.
I know. My sinus infection is back, so I probably should listen to my own stupid advice.
Exactly.
It's not stupid advice. It's good advice.
Exactly what I've been saying.
I'm going to take some antibiotics. I'm going to knock these boogers to the fucking dirt.
Okay.
Kick this infection in the dick. But we...
we digress.
We digress, and we're at the pool party. And my first thought is, it must be nice to be so rich that you can throw a wedding-level party just for the sake of embarrassing your husband's mistress. And I was like, this is petty supreme. And that's like serious fuck you money to be like, we're going to have this entire party just as a setup for me to surprise my entire family by letting them know that I knew that my husband was having an affair and this was not a secret. And then in the process of not just letting them know, I'm going to embarrass the woman that he was having an affair with in front of everybody in the family and everybody that's keeping the secrets, including her fucking shitty brother who was acting on behalf of protecting the secret. He has to take it on the chin too. All of the kids that weren't quite aware yet are... beginning to get aware. There's a little scene like when Holly first shows up and not Tommy, who's the other brother, Matthew Rhys, damn it, I'll get better at this, I promise. Kevin. He's got like a margarita in his hand and they see Holly walk by and Justin takes the margarita from him and takes a drink and he's just like, it's gonna be a rough day.
I love them. I mean, I love all of them because of this show especially, but their chemistry together gets so powerful. And just like the little mannerisms of like that kind of a scene, it's just like gut-wrenching in so many different ways. But also, I agree. I love Sally Field for doing this. But we also have the other side story around the pool party where Paige, who is Sarah's daughter, is fearful of going back in the water and everyone's kind of oblivious as to why she doesn't want to swim and not paying attention to it because of all their other distractions. When really it was Paige that was sitting by the pool with William, her grandfather, when he had his heart attack and fell in the pool. And they just kind of gloss over that at first.
Well, it's weird because like say all that had happened, and then the little girl goes into the house and there's like, there's something wrong with grandpa. And then we see him floating in the pool and the episode ends, right? It's not quite like that. All of the brothers jump into the pool. So it's like they're all well aware of what transpired in that pool. So the obliviousness around it is a little weird, I think. I mean, I don't mean to like get too personal, but like, you know, your grandfather passed away recently, and like the thought of sitting in his chair, like, was like, do we even do that? Do we sit in his chair? Because like, he's not here anymore. That's a real thing. And so I feel like the brothers should be aware. But then again, Sarah's husband being Joe and being a schmuck may not be aware enough of that situation. I don't think he was one of the guys in the water.
He wasn't one that was in the water, but he's the one that points out to Sarah like, hey, she was the one out here with him when your dad died, you all know? Right.
Little bonus points for
little
Joe,
bonus.
Then.
But I think what better. I think what we see is because they're all so wrapped up in themselves and all the chaos and turmoil that's come with his, with dad's passing for them, that it was, and we see it in Sarah too, like, oh my God, I didn't even like connect the dots at first because everything else was moving so quickly and there was so much going on around them and their own just like personal lack of awareness or really just self-involvement is very overpowering and overshadowing of all of that, which unfortunately is not any different than a lot of people deal with today too.
Yeah. It's like, I think one of the easiest things to do in the wake of tragedy is to sort of like you throw yourself back into work, because work is there. You know how to do it. It's a distraction. And you see that like everybody is kind of working in some capacity, either like directly as a result of his death or just sort of on the periphery, like, because it's a family business, so those people are working. You have the lawyer brother who's advising. The mom is doing her sort of like estate stuff. So they're all like occupied, I would say, at least somewhat mentally, to where they could overlook something like that. But as the party wraps up, I think, you know, Holly leaves embarrassed.
Which right? was great. I enjoyed it. She should be.
And I think there's a moment after that where the kids talk to the mom, or at least one of them does, because what I wrote down was, what is love without sacrifice? And I think that's what Sally Field told to one of her kids. Like, how could you basically like let him cheat and get away with it all these years? And she's describing like, what is love without sacrifice? Like, when it's easy, it's easy. But
when it's hard
is when it matters.
Yeah, I think it's Sarah that it's either Sarah or Kitty. I think it's one of the girls that says, if you knew this whole time, why did you stay or something? Yeah. Or why did you look the other way, kind of a thing? And I think this comes up a lot in different scenarios, too, especially portrayed on television. And it's not as common. And another reason why I love this show is that they deal with difficult things and they don't do it in a cookie cutter way. And life is messy. Families are messy. We know this. And we don't need another drama to just show us what a picture perfect family looks like, because that's not reality. And this is more realistic, that she has this marriage for X number of years and it's a successful business. She's got it, built a huge family with him. It's not that easy to just walk away. And I think women are shamed for that. And, like, I understand to a certain point as far as if it's maybe a lack of respect for themselves, but we don't know if we're not in their shoes, what are their reasons for staying? Because it's not that easy. It's not black or white. It's a gray area.
Well, you mentioned sort of not being a conventional family drama in that way, but I guess like that begs the question, like what shows were just the cookie cutter family shows? So I feel like the most direct comparison to this would be like Seventh Heaven, maybe.
Yeah.
But Seventh Heaven deal with a lot of shit. It turns out the dad and like that is like really terrible in real life.
I mean, that's some hidden subliminal messaging right there. Right. I would say Seventh. It's more of like the portrayal of it, like Seventh Heaven. And I think like family ties and like family matters, like they deal with life things, but then it's like everything's resolved in one episode.
Those are sitcoms too, though.
Yeah. But I'm saying like we have a lot of those kind of shows, right?
Or Roseanne, The Roseanne, Simpsons,
yeah, exactly.
Cosby Show.
And from a family drama, I just don't think there was a lot of family dramas at the time that are like, you're starting out with dysfunction on episode one, essentially.
It's a good question. I mean, like growing up, like it was so sitcom heavy and like Seinfeld dominated, Frasier, Simpsons was on TV, Friends was on TV. Like it was the heyday of like all-time legacy sort of sitcoms. So there wasn't a place in the market for hour-long, heavy-hitting family dramas. It was like, you have Friends, you have Seinfeld, you have Frasier, and then on the other side, it's like Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place, ER. So there wasn't like an in-between those two.
Then maybe it's the little bit older shows, because it's like the whole quote-unquote American dream of having your white picket fence house, you know, like
Leave It to Beaver,
like parents are together, not divorced, mom stays home as a housewife,
Happy Days.
Yeah, like those, even if they are sitcoms, it's still a very specific portrayal where this, regardless if it's a drama or it's a sitcom or not, this kind of broke that very early on for at least our generation. Like I said, maybe older, like even Bewitched, right? Like it's the wife, you know, is home all day and then she's cooking dinner and they have kids. I Dream of Jeannie, and husband comes home from work and
Dick
here,
Van Dyke.
Dinner's ready. You know, like that was the norm of what we saw as quote unquote functional, perfect cookie cutter picture families. And this just kind of blew all of that out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe even I Love Lucy to some degree. Mm-hmm. Although, like, there was always conflict in those episodes. Like, her and Ricky fought a lot over stuff like autonomy and career decisions and like, what happens in the household and what happens with the kid. And I think, I mean, I love that show. We should do I Love Lucy. I know if we did it, Vanya would want to come on and talk about
it. Yeah, she totally should. I mean, I love Lucy too. And it would be interesting. I don't think I've ever watched it like start to finish because I just watch, you know, we just got the reruns on TV kind of a thing.
I think I have the box set somewhere, okay. At least of the first couple seasons. But I would maybe, the thing about the early episodes of The Simpsons is that it started as very much like a family drama. So many of the early episodes are about challenges to Homer and Marge's marriage, whether that be infidelity, whether that be Homer sort of being selfish and not prioritizing the family needs. A lot of stuff like that, where watching it as a kid, you don't pick up on that because it's a cartoon. There's slapsticky stuff happening. That's fine. Watching it as an adult, I've gone back and I started watching that early season of The Simpsons. There's just like times where I would just like cry, and not necessarily tears of sadness, but tears of joy in that a show like that could be as funny as it is and then still have this undercurrent of like real heart. And you have like Homer and Marge reconcile their differences and still stay together. And then there's episodes later and still where they're in the good years where like she's seriously considering leaving him because he is a fucking drunk and he's an idiot and like he's abusive to his son. So I really want to do The Simpsons at some point. I think I would cap it maybe at season 10 because it's still going. Like we would still be chasing the dragon. It's a much different show now that the writers have changed, but maybe we just tackle a limited amount of something like that.
Yeah.
And it's short too. We could do a lot of episodes because they're only 20 something minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I'd kind of seen something recently on social media, and I think it resonates through all of this too of, you know, like social media today kind of is the same representation where you're only seeing all the positives and.
Not on my social media.
Well, not the pauses about like what's going on, but like people are controlling what you're seeing of their own lives to make it look like they're living this like high life dream and
it's
everything
all very curated. Yeah.
Yeah. Like everything is perfect. And look at this new car. but they're not sharing the messy stuff. And it's like, we see enough of that perfect quote unquote cookie cutter world. We need to see the reality of things because people are struggling. Everyone is struggling with something. And it's giving you a false sense of like what life should look like or what social media should look like. And it's doing a disservice to a lot of people and why people like in the influencer world, like will struggle with mental health because they didn't get a certain number of likes or, you know, like a picture is not famous enough or whatever the branding thing may be. And that's very relevant still today, 20 plus years later.
Yeah. Well, the good news is there's a lot of shows that we can tackle.
Yeah. Not enough time. This is why I wanted to do TV for so long.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely have a long list of stuff to get to. We'll see what we take on next, but I think we'll probably, because I was thinking of some the other day too, and I was like, ooh, I could add this one to the list. So we'll see definitely some blend. But when we do the hours, mm-hmm. we'll have sort of something that we come to terms on. Because I think like, I definitely want to talk about like Trying. I think
Great show. Love that show. I'm so glad you gave that a chance because that being the first Apple TV show and I binged it so hard so fast when I first saw it, I was like, where did this come from? And it's so raw. It's definitely, you know, trigger warning for a lot of people who have struggled with fertility. But the rawness around it and again, not like, oh, they tried and now they're pregnant. Now we just get to see this storyline. It's more realistic. And I think we need more of that portrayed on film and in television because that's really reality. So it kind of takes the quote unquote reality TV to a different level.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people use television as escapism. Same thing with movies. So you don't want to go to see real life portrayed, but you know, there's people out there that get a lot out of that. And I think, you know, it's a balance. I don't think either is right or wrong, but
yeah, I'm not saying like everything needs to be the same like that, but there should be more of it.
All right. Well, speaking of more, I think that'll put a pin in our episode 3 discussion. All and right. We'll be back for episode 4, a little bit more refreshed and plugged into the thing that actually happened. I'll take better notes in terms of like what's happening sequentially, so that way my notes are not just in a vacuum of like, hey, yeah, tell that bitch to fuck off kind of thing, and being like woohoo, but I don't know who's the bitch and who's telling who to fuck off in that situation. So
use names now that you probably have a better
idea. I will get better at
the
names, I promise. Look, the last note that I have, there are too many characters, maybe. Only 3 seem to be really fully formed at this point. So there's a lot of characters to keep track of. They like, here's 10 main characters. Good luck. It's episode 3. I'll get better. It's Sarah, Kitty, Tommy, Kevin, Justin, William's the husband, Saul's the uncle, Holly is the mistress, Jonathan's the boyfriend, yep. And Sam?
Warren.
Fuck. Almost. Look, 9 out of 10. Warren is the hate fuck buddy.
Guess what? There's going to be more coming.
Well, they better slow down. Everybody, I'm going to have like a little vision board here that looks like, you know, when someone's investigating a crime and they got pins in it and names and suspects and stuff. It'd be cool. We'd get rid of this metal thing on the wall. Put a bulletin board here with our little cheat sheet.
Yeah, that's true. Like a not a murder board, but what do they call it?
Murder board.
No, for crime dramas.
Yeah.
When they're trying to solve the crime.
The murder board.
Is it a murder board?
I think so.
All right.
Or if we replace this with a TV and just like use it as a monitor, and then I can sort of link up.
Yeah.
Do a
dual screen
digital version kind.
Hey, fun fact, I just found out James Rodriguez. Is it Rodriguez now?
That's his real last name, but he changed it so he wasn't discriminated against.
I mean, that makes sense
during hiring, but he's since gone back to it. Yeah,
That makes sense, because when I was trying to act, I dropped Ortiz and just used Kristen Danielle. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I was getting sent to only Spanish-speaking commercials.
Anyway. Anyways, we love James here.
We love James Rodé. He is directing High Potential.
Ah. All of it? Or just the upcoming episode?
He's doing the finale for sure, but he's been directing, I think, several episodes. But they've highlighted the finale because it's going to be a big one that he's director of it. And I was like, hey, it's exciting. Yeah.
Well, maybe we do Psych as like the second or third hours pick, because we got to do Friends first.
We have to do Friends first.
Then I think since that's a sitcom, we do drama after that. So I think Trying is probably a good one for that. Okay. Then maybe we pivot back and forth that way.
Okay. All right.
Cool beans.
All right.
All right. Take care. We'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.